Malin Hoff, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
And in terms of the game on Thursday, the majority of the starters will not play in that game. We feel really good about our process, the plan that we've had, in terms of the range of plays for certain players.
Mullen Haas, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to The Score. That is the voice of Matt Eberflus.
Yep. Final preseason game tonight. We need to do some level setting here. So I think we kind of casually threw out there during the pick six or maybe before that in conversation about what is at stake tonight. And we understand the value of this opportunity for a lot of the bottom of the roster players and maybe fringe guys. And we said maybe casually that if you are not in uniform tonight, you made the team. That doesn't mean that everyone who plays hasn't. I think that's mathematically really illogical to suggest that, because like, let's look at a case like Austin Booker. Do you think Austin Booker plays tonight, Mully? He's made the team, right? He's a guy that they have to rely upon, maybe more than they would want to at this point. But Austin Booker, fifth-round draft pick, who has been a success story of preseason to this point, he's playing tonight because he needs the work.
Yeah, I think he's going to play because I think it's a, you know, here's the thing. You've got to field a team, and you got to field a team of guys that kind of know what they're doing. You want everyone, you want to evaluate everyone, but you also, there are guys there that you know, they're playing football, man.
It's not just evaluation, it's improving.
Exactly.
You got to see improvement.
Yes. He's not a starter. He has a role. We don't know how much of a role he'll have. It'd be nice to see him do some nice stuff tonight.
Totally
it?
Agree.
Shouldn't he dominate a little bit?
He should flash.
Yes.
I don't know about dominate.
I agree. Flash.
He should flash.
Word.
I think that Dante Pettis, he's got to play. Mm-hmm. He's got to continue to.
He's got to win that. He's got to win that job. Or he's got to get an opportunity. You know, I mean. Look, one of the more interesting players is who's the punt returner that Big Z likes, DeAndre Carter.
Mm-hmm.
That guy's like, how old is he? He's like in his 30s.
He's
bounced around like six or seven teams.
Still like to see him.
That's a guy that knows how to make a football team.
Mm-hmm.
That's a guy who's been on the cusp of the league for a very long time. He's putting a career together here because he can do these things and he's sure-handed. My opinion, Velus Jones needs to show something.
I think he should play
tonight. Let's see what he can do.
I don't know if Dustin, as he said, I don't know if Velus Jones will start at running back, but he should get a lot of reps there.
I agree.
I think he should be used in a variety of ways out of the backfield.
He needs to show something to make the team, in my opinion. He needs to show that he understands what the position is. I you know, the guy, they're trying him as a running back because he couldn't make the roster as a wide receiver.
Give him some chances.
They're giving him an opportunity.
Pass protect, give him some chances to catch a swing pass to show what he has in space, as they say.
After Bajan is out.
Well, after Bajan is out or after Bajan is in, I want Bajan to look good.
I don't want Bajan being protected by Velus Jones is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, I see, because you're worried about not picking up the stray
I'm worried about
blitzer.
Everything yeah. with that guy.
Yeah, I know. And that sounds understandable. He has not earned the benefit of the doubt in this now year three of the Velus Jones experiment.
Will there be a year three of Velus Jones? You believe there will, right? You think that his specialty is so special?
I don't know if he's so special, but I think that I would be, I may be the only guy in town. I'd be reluctant to cut somebody that fast. And I know speed is something a lot of people possess at this point in time. You did invest a third-round draft pick. I would like to see one more time if that was something you could get something out of. We'll see. Might not be. Their minds are made up. They know already. They know already what they're going to do with this roster. The cuts will probably start tomorrow. You know
yeah,
that
they know the roster.
They have until next Tuesday, I think, but it doesn't mean they'll take until next Tuesday. There's going to be a lot of movement around the league.
There should be weekend cuts, no doubt about it.
How about what the Falcons are doing? This does relate to what the Bears are looking at in terms of their roster. Mm-hmm. The Falcons have had an interesting week. We saw from Hard Knocks about the flirtation the Bears had with Matthew Judon and why they stayed away from that investment, giving up a third-round pick, not being able to work out or commit to an extension, so he goes to Atlanta. Atlanta then turns around on Wednesday and signs Justin Simmons.
Yep.
They just got better rushing the passer. Both Justin Simmons and Matthew Judon cited the presence of Kirk Cousins and why they were, you know, why the Falcons appealed to them. Have the Falcons gotten decent now? Do they have in two, you know, 30-something pass rushers past their prime, perhaps? Do they have the semblance of a pass rush that is good enough? And if that is true, if the answer is yes, does part of you wonder a little bit why Ryan Poles wasn't willing to go a little bit further to get one of those guys here?
It's a very interesting question, and I think that the answer would be they're in a division that you can make a move where you're signing 30-year-olds to make a move this year. That division, on a yearly basis, seems to churn over a new representative. And I think that there is an opportunity there that might not exist here.
Fair enough.
And I know everyone thinks I'm an idiot.
No, you're not an idiot. No. Do you feel like when you saw the Justin Simmons news that, boy, you know, why weren't the Bears? Did you wonder that? Why weren't the Bears in on him?
I think the Bears are going to add a pass rusher. I just don't know if it's going to be inside. I think the Bears might be a player short inside. I would love to see him get another pass rusher. I just don't know how they're going to go about doing it. I think that with everybody getting cut, there will be players available. And then there is still, you know, they know Ngakoue because he was with them. I don't know how they feel about him. He's tried out for a lot of teams and not signed. There were different times where I thought that he should be signed. I don't think anyone's signing him now.
Justin Simmons is a safety. Sorry, that's a correction. I was thinking Justin Houston.
No,
the pass rusher. Justin Simmons is a safety. But the point being, the Falcons defense
are trying to get their defense better. I knew what you were saying.
They are getting to the point where offensively they have. I mean, their weaponry's good.
Yeah,
their defense now has been supplemented by two veterans who had choices, and they chose the Falcons. And I don't know if that's a good choice, because I just don't know. I never thought of the Falcons as one of those teams that is like to be feared in the NFC.
I don't believe they are, but I think they might be a team that's good enough to win in the NFC South. See what I'm saying? Like, it's a little bit different. I don't feel like there's anybody like dominant in that division, and I think they've gotten better. And they have a chance because they've gotten better. But I think Kirk Cousins is a good player. I really do. I don't know that he's like a Showtime player. I don't know that he's a guy. I think he's going to win on a regular basis. I think he can win. I don't know that he can take a team and win when it really counts.
Do you believe that the Bears...
Not a primetime player.
Do you believe that the Bears' second best pass rusher is on this roster yet?
Yeah.
Who is that?
It's Austin Booker.
Okay. So you don't think that they're going to be claiming...
I do think that they're going to add to the defense.
Other trash,
relatively speaking. I don't think it's trash.
It's not trash.
No, I think...
Discarded players.
They will add another player. I don't think they have their defensive line on this roster. I think right now that Montez Sweat, obviously, is their best pass rusher. I think they're okay on the other side. I like him. He's not a bad player. I think that Booker has a little special that may flash and may end up with, you know what, 4 or 5 sacks, something like that. That'll be good. I think the Bears, the problem is they've had, what, 30 sacks the last 2 years? That's, David, you got to get better than that.
You got to get better than that.
And they may get better just situationally because teams are going to be throwing
teams
more.
Teams are going to be throwing more. Flusie's going to be a little more aggressive. Yeah. He trusts his defense a little bit more.
Yes.
Let's go to the other side of the ball, because I wonder where you stand on what Dustin and I have a little bit of a wager on. Is Nate Davis in uniform tonight?
I would not make that wager. I would think Dustin's buying coffee tomorrow. Because here's the thing.
That's a relief.
I think that, yeah, I think that he's calling a lot of his own shots, too. I think they're trying to get him to do different stuff. I think if you made a guy like that play, it would be punitive, as Dustin wants him to play because he thinks that he should be punished for not being around and not having enough downs. I don't think he's ready. He still has a few more weeks, and I know that's just getting up and running against your own team, but I don't think that anybody he goes against today is going to be that much better. But then again, he gave up a sack to a guy that is third or fourth on their depth chart last week.
Do you think that any guys who are veterans who might be rusty coming back from injury have not had many practice reps? How often do you think in your experience covering the team, I'm trying to think, does someone say,
preseason game?
I want to play. I need the reps. I need the time.
No one really wants to play,
right?
Especially in a game this bad. And frankly, the priority for the team, the only thing you want is to come out of it clean. Health, good health. You got a team and you got a couple of like soft tissue injuries or minor issues. You know, I don't like the idea that Ryan Bates has a shoulder that's preventing him from playing. That's a bad idea because shoulders.
He's missed six practices.
That's a lot. You know, Kevin Byard hasn't missed a practice in his career, and he's missed the last two.
I think yesterday was third in a row.
Was that the third one?
Yeah. So,
David,
what is he eating at Hallis Hall?
I'm just wondering.
Remember, isn't he the guy
that green smoothie isn't treating
that
him so
green
well, huh?
smoothie and his sliced bananas all the things?
But, you know, oh, it's not a big deal. Don't worry about it. Let me tell you something.
No, it's a big deal.
Yeah. When a guy never misses a practice, and all of a sudden he's out three practices, yes,
because you wonder if he's going to be.
And you know what? He only has a soft tissue injury. Holy mother of God! Like if I had a paper cut, it would be like we'd have to do some kind of promulgation. Mully injured. That idea that you only have a
tissue.
Soft tissue that
could pull a muscle.
That could be something that really waylays your
that
season.
Soft tissue. I know. We're not trainers. We don't have access to that information.
He just snapped a hamstring.
Oh, that all? That's only 4 to 6 weeks.
Well, everything is weeks.
46?
46 defense.
4-2-6. 4-2-6 weeks. And by the way, Jaquan Brisker, now here's a question.
Yeah.
He has not seen live action.
Yes.
Really, all preseason.
I know.
Do you trust him to go into the season without having any kind of experience to calibrate?
I don't think this game, this is a glorified practice. This is a game. The hint of desperation around some people's careers, like this could be the end. This is the last time you'll see this guy attempt to compete in the NFL. Let's put our safety out there and have him hit one of those guys. I'm just saying, I don't know that it's a good idea. I think that there's a lot of really desperate people trying to show something, and you got to be careful about who you're playing.
This is a rhetorical question. I don't think it has an answer. At what point, though, did professional sports become
like
so influenced, so heavily influenced by the fear of injury? It hasn't always been that way.
Well, you know, the reality is, when I first started out as a sports writer, my big break was covering the Bulls. You know, I got to work covering the NBA. Then I moved to the NFL. And I got to tell you, I remember the great Brian Harlan going into his office and just like I was just appalled at how injured these players were and how damaged these guys were and what these injuries were and how severe they were. The NFL is unbelievable. At the end of the season, you got six or seven guys that need surgery. Surgery. Again, if I had any kind of procedure, this would be like, oh, my God.
It's a car crash every play.
It's a car crash every play. And the injuries, you know, again, I've told the story. Mark Bortz in the locker room with three fingers moving in different directions. I've never seen anything
like
that.
I'm not disputing that.
And I said to him, what are you going to do? And he looked at me. Fingers don't matter in football. That's what he said.
Okay.
I mean, holy mother of God.
So that
come in handy typing.
That's not something that somebody would say today. That's kind of part of the point.
And you know what, David? You're so right because it's about the NBA. and it's about how nobody wants to play that
load management.
Load management.
You look at baseball, we're conserving innings. Everybody's scared to death of getting hurt.
We're going to have this guy not pitch six. He'll go four. We'll just go four in because we don't want to put too much stress on.
But it's pervasive in every sport in different ways.
Pervasive is the word.
And I think that I wonder, again, I don't know if there's an answer to this question, but I do wonder, when did it change where the concerns for health and safety and what we're talking about, the injury status of players, the long-term prognosis outweighed the need to play and to practice and to get better at your craft? Because that's what we're talking about here. Jaquan Brisker would be better on week one, as an example. The more you see live reps in game action, at game speed, regardless of who the quarterback is, it doesn't have to be Patrick Mahomes throwing to whoever. You get better at playing football by playing football. Now, but you also do encounter an increased risk. That risk is what paralyzes teams in every sport to be more cautious and, I think, judicious in how they play guys.
You know, you kind of look at the NFL and your chances of being great exist until about 28 years old, because by that time, your athleticism, your ability as an athlete is breaking down. You've taken too many hits. You know, the reason running backs aren't getting paid is because
after 28,
they get hit. They fall off a ledge. This is the problem with professional sports. Some guy back in the day, nobody cared. They just kept going. They were part of winning teams, and their leadership was too important. So you held guys onto teams that probably passed their prime. But once what you want is a group of players all hitting their prime around the same time.
Is every sport getting younger?
It seems that way.
Is every sport getting younger? You look at Chicago, the biggest superstars in town in Chicago sports. Connor Bedard's a teenager.
Yes.
Caleb Williams is 22. You look around baseball. How many 21-year-olds are named Jackson? Are taking over? You look at the NBA. The draft we just encountered and covered and watched. How many guys are older than 21 that went in the top 15?
So you look at the NBA and you look at the Olympics. Who were the stars on that, right? They were all in their late 30s.
The old guard.
It's the old guard.
Durant, LeBron, and Steph.
It doesn't mean you couldn't win with younger players, but you couldn't do 90-90
without
Steph.
That's a great example. The Olympics are about right now.
The
Olympics are about urgency in the moment.
Yes.
Forget about the future. We're talking about the present.
LeBron may be 39,
but
whatever.
He's the best you got.
He's learned how to win, and he knows when to win, and he can win now, and he's the guy.
Professional sports teams are all about investing in later. Forget about now. Not forget about now, but you have to do both. And what they do is they avoid guys who are past their primes. They avoid running backs who are getting closer to 28 or shooting guards who were 25 years old. They're not going
to
draft him because you know what? He's not going to develop. He's too old.
Yeah, you look at Keenan Allen. What is he, 32 now?
Washed up.
Finished.
Finished.
Everybody can see
it. You see that dad bod he has?
Yeah, we'll ask Dan Wiederer. He's looking at this guy on a daily basis. Does he look fat to you? Holy mother of God. I'm going to have to lose another person so I can look as fat as Keenan Allen. We'll have Dan Wiederer next. Mullion Haw on the score.
Mullion Haw.
Longtime listener. Huge fan of the show.
On 670 The Score.
Goes back to, for Caleb in particular, just his spatial awareness and, his ability to see the full picture, knows where everyone is, and that's where I see it with him, as he continues to develop, really just getting a handle on the reps and the accumulated reps of certain concepts. But as far as seeing the picture and then being able to get to different windows or different rush lanes that he finds, he's got that natural ability.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to The Score. That is the voice of Shane Waldron. He, of course, is the offensive coordinator of the Chicago Bears, and we are delighted to welcome in Dan Wiederer. Dan joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Dan, good morning. How are you?
Doing great. We got first day of kindergarten for the princess over here this morning, so it's an exciting morning inside the Weederer household.
Ah, that's wonderful. I think Brandon's taking his daughter to her first day of kindergarten today, too.
So that time of year.
We've all been there and done it, and I'm talking about kindergarten. And no, it's a great magical moment, the first day of school. Really beautiful. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, we're ready to go, and I'm ready to get into week zero next week before we cross the bridge into week one.
Well, it's week zero in college football, so I think that we're excited about that on Saturday. But, Dan, tonight, the final preseason game for the Bears, not a lot to look for in terms of the starters, obviously. What will you be watching specifically?
Yeah, so, look, the initial 53-man roster is due to the league office on Tuesday afternoon of next week. And so you're trying to figure out where those true battles are. I kind of sketched it out last night, counted 42 guys that are no doubt, no questions asked, already guaranteed a roster spot for week one. And so then that leaves you 11 spots in a lot of various places. And so you're trying to figure out where those the biggest position battles are and where the biggest squeezes are. And then you got a chance to watch three quarterbacks tonight, including Tyson Bagent, who, David, as you and I talked about yesterday, in an ideal world, this will be his last game action on a football field in 2024. He's made a lot of development here in his second season. You want to see that continue. We all know better. We've all lived through enough Bear seasons to know that the QB2 is typically needed at some point during every Bear season for some reason or another. And so kind of tracking Tyson's continued growth, I think, is a big deal for this football team.
Yeah, I agree with that, Dan. You know, when I watch these games, I kind of tend to look at the lines. I'm very curious to see the offensive line. How many offensive linemen are in your 42? How many defensive linemen are in your 42? I think there are probably – they probably are more set on the offensive line, as crazy as that may sound to people, than they are – they might be a player short on the defensive line. They may need somebody from another team or
right
off the street, whatever.
Yeah, and to that latter point, when you look at their defensive tackle depth, it doesn't leave you feeling great. With as much as we've kind of spent the offseason praising the rise of Jervon Dexter, between him and Andrew Billings on the starting line, there's not a lot of quality depth behind them. And so I do think you're right that they're going to keep exploring to see if there's something outside of the building that can help them fortify that depth going into the regular season. And the offensive line, I've got eight guys locked in on the 53-man, which leaves you with probably one, maybe two spots for that initial 53. And that leaves guys like Larry Borum and Jatari Carter and to some extent Doug Kramer fighting for a spot. And I say Doug Kramer's name because we don't have real clarity right now on what Ryan Bates' injury situation is. And so you've got Coleman Shelton right now holding down the number one center job. But if Bates is going to be out for a little while, then you're going to need somebody else that can snap the ball when you get in the regular season. And so you're going to have to play some of that roster mechanic musical chairs to get yourself in a good spot.
So, Dan, we were talking earlier about Keenan Allen and the kind of preseason he has had. As much as you have watched practice, how would you describe where he is in terms of preparation? And where did this notion that maybe he is past or maybe he is washed, where did that come from?
Or he put on 20 pounds, right?
And I honestly don't know where this stuff came from because Colleen Kane brought it up to me over the weekend. And I was thinking, man, like, where did this weight confusion come from there? Keenan looks like a veteran football player who's known how to run routes in this league for a decade or longer. He's coming off a year where obviously he missed the end of the season with an injury, but had 1,300 plus yards. He's still very capable of being a very productive receiver in this league. If anything has caused him to struggle a little bit during training camp, it's the guy wearing the number one jersey. Jalen Johnson has been a thorn in his side for a lot of the one-on-one battles, for a lot of seven-on-seven. Jalen is ascending, you know, and he's going to make life hard on people. But I don't have many concerns, if any, about Keenan Allen's readiness to contribute in the way the Bears offense needs him to when the regular season begins in a couple weeks.
Is Velus Jones on your list of guys who've made the team?
No, he is not. He's on that bubble list. And then you got to figure out which position are you trying to bubble him in? Because at the receiver position, you're trying to find a punt returner, Dante Pettis, DeAndre Carter, guys who can kind of hold down that fifth receiver spot with the ability to catch punts. Which one of those guys is going to kind of distinguish themselves here in the next few days to Ryan Poles and his staff? In the running backs room, you've got roster spots saved for Swift and Roshan and Travis Homer. And then that leaves you with Kari Blazin game. If you want to keep the fullback, it's Khalil Herbert, who I think they're probably leaning towards keeping. And then that leaves Velus on the outside looking in. And so this will be a good closing argument for him in Kansas City tonight to show this coaching staff in a couple different phases that he can help them in some way. Otherwise, his time here with the Bears may be running short.
You mentioned Tyson Bagent, and you spent some time listening to him yesterday. Very entertaining. And he's very ambitious. I think, like a lot of young quarterbacks, the confidence is high right now. What do you make of what his career path could look like? And how do you explain a guy how a year ago we didn't really know who he was or where he came from? Now he's talking about doing things that nobody thinks possible in his career.
Here's how I explain it. He grinds his absolute face off. I mean, that is kind of the formula, you know, and as funny as it is, that is what Tyson has done his whole football life. And he had a lot of experience, albeit at the Division II level in college, playing the position, getting a feel for the position, understanding what things look like. And that's only grown here in his year plus with the Bears. I have no idea where his career ultimately ends up. I have no reason to tell him that it's not going to end up where he thinks it's going to end up, because the dude puts in the work every single day. I think one of the things that Dante Pettis told me earlier in the week is that he just comes into the building every day with an energy of a guy that is ready to work and he's ready to chase big goals, but is ready to do so with enthusiasm and fun that brings people along with him. And so that gets you support. It gets you support from coaches, teammates. It gets people to rally behind you. I think, David, the one thing that I've been really impressed with is Tyson went into this offseason understanding where his weaknesses were and really diving into those. One of those is getting better with the deep ball and developing arm strength in ways that isn't just about making your arm stronger. It's about making your core stronger, about understanding mechanics of how to throw that pass. And so you've got a guy who understands everything about himself and is going to squeeze the absolute most out of him. And we'll just ultimately see where that ends in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, whatever it is.
You know, we had a long conversation about quarterbacks in the NFC. I think when you look at the list of them, it is not as daunting as the list in the AFC.
No doubt.
And if Caleb can meet some of the expectation, the Bears could really get on a roll here. I mean, when you really look at
and
measure it, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, you're right, Mully, and it's why you roll this dice. You roll these dice on the chance to be excellent as a football franchise with a quarterback who can do those things. I remember when Aaron Rodgers left for New York and Tom Brady stepped out of the league for good this time. And you said, man, that just took two quarterbacks who were sort of the gatekeepers in the playoffs in the NFC out of the picture. And, you know, Breeze a little bit before that. It's a wide open landscape in the NFC. And you have an opportunity now, if Caleb Williams meets the hype, to open a door for a decade or longer of being a team that's consistently in the mix. And I don't know that any of us is truly prepared for it because of the last 12 years of our lives and watching them kind of just flutter in mediocrity for so long. The potential for that door to be opening, it like almost blows your mind. I'm sure you guys feel similarly.
What's the dynamic between Caleb Williams and Shane Waldron? And then I guess to a lesser degree, or maybe a greater degree, Caleb Williams and Matt Eberflus.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just open lines of communication right now. And I think Caleb has learned very early in his rookie season not to keep his mouth shut, that if he's uncomfortable, if he has questions, if he wants to alter something, he's going to bring it up and they're going to have a discussion and they're going to exchange those thoughts and try to work through it. Everyone in the organization understands that their futures can be incredibly bright if this young man reaches his potential. And so having those open lines of communication is the first step of trying to create comfort. We always talk about the three C's with the quarterback position. You create the comfort, which leads to the confidence, which ultimately creates the command that opens doors. And so that is the process that's ongoing right here. I think Shane has been very impressed with how much he can load onto Caleb Williams without overwhelming him. And so they've done a lot of that in July and August and even going back into the spring. And so now you start to kind of pull that back and create your identity and refine and figure out what you want to be as an offense. The other thing that I'll say is that there is a admiration within the offensive meeting room for how well Caleb handles himself in the pocket. You know, we talked forever about Justin Fields' lack of pocket feel. And you saw that reflected in the sack rate numbers, and everybody blamed the offensive line and tried to find other scapegoats for that. Justin had historically bad sack rate numbers. I think you're going to see sack rate numbers from Caleb Williams that are like 1/4 of what we saw with Justin Fields. And there's a feel for the pocket and a feel for the position that's really going to enhance his ability to succeed early.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see what those numbers look like, how long you hold the ball, et cetera, because even in the preseason, Justin Fields is holding the ball too long, and they're making a point of it in Pittsburgh. I'm curious about what you just said about him in the pocket, because one of the things that we've seen is his unbelievable ability, Mahomes-like ability, when he gets around the pocket, he's buying time and then able to throw, even moving to his left. An extraordinary thing, and we've seen a lot of pockets move. And I heard Rick Spielman, I believe, was on his podcast talking about how to defend him, and basically said that what you've seen in the preseason makes me believe that people have to keep him in the pocket. They're going to be trying to keep him in the pocket. Which is are the Bears playing him in the way they did, showing that he can hit all three levels of throws while moving in order to kind of get him into what is his comfort zone? Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, his comfort zone is outside the pocket. And that's why everyone sees this high level potential for him, because when you are good at what is not your best trait, all of a sudden you become really hard to defend. And so if teams make him stay inside the pocket and you're able to win from inside there, well, now what do you do? And that's what makes you the ultimate weapon offensively. I think forever, till the end of his NFL career, his ability to get off script and make plays on the move and throw that deep ball with incredible touch and accuracy, as you mentioned, all three levels of the field while on the move, is going to be the superpower. And now it's just like, okay, so what do you have when they try to take your superpower away? Well, you have another gift, which is the ability to stand inside the pocket and make throws. It's funny because on Monday morning, when I went back through the Bengals game, two of the throws that I started is like, yeah, that's what it's supposed to look like from an NFL quarterback, was a 9-yard completion to Cole Kmet, hit the top of your drop, rip it, throw it, completion, just take the 9 and get on to the next play. And an 11-yarder later in the game to Simba Webster, similar thing. And then Shane Waldron brought those up unprompted in his introductory overview of how he thought Caleb played on Saturday afternoon. And so those are examples of a guy who understands the clock, who understands the need to take completions that are right there for you, and not to try to make them take too long. Just be quick, process it, see it, throw it, rip it, take the yards, and get on to the next play. If Caleb's able to do that, even at a medium level as a rookie, the offense starts to see its potential rise.
Dan, is there a quarterback in the NFC you would rather have for the next 3 to 5 years than Caleb Williams?
NFC or NFC North?
NFC.
Both. Because the answer is in the NFC North, but go ahead.
Yeah, because, honestly, when I look through the NFC North, I don't see a guy that I would take instead of Caleb when you're opening up the doors to the future on this, right? It's not about now. It's about 25, 26, 27, 28. I'm trying to go through in my head right now who the other top tier quarterbacks are in the NFC. Am I missing somebody that I'm forgetting?
Hurts, Dak, Stafford.
Hurts, Dak. Jordan Love, I think. Brock Purdy, we didn't mention.
Outside the division, he's talking about Purdy. Yeah.
Okay, Kyler Murray, Baker
Bryce
Mayfield,
Young,
Geno Smith.
You haven't turned my head.
Exactly.
Any of them, which is crazy, right? Like, it's crazy. It's like, that's what I mean when I say I don't know that we're ready for the idea that, wait a second, is this really sort of that holy grail that the Bears have been chasing for 70 plus years? Has it really finally arrived? Now, look, like, none of the three of us is going to get out in front of ourselves and do any premature coronations here. But I think what we're recognizing here is the potential and the gifts and the prerequisite that Caleb has for playing the position at a high level, and then just sort of sitting back in our seats and saying, like, yeah, let's go along for the journey here, and let's see where it takes the Bears.
It's fun to talk about, but we haven't seen him play yet. I'm just saying, I
agree.
I think what's great about this kid is the confidence, the way he handles himself, the feeling that when the game comes to the important parts, the end of the game, let's say, he's going to win it for you. But we got to see it happen.
But we have seen him play.
We haven't seen that part.
We've seen 43 snaps, and in 43 snaps, we're getting carried away. That's what we do.
That's true. It's true.
If we had not seen him play, this is not a question you're asking in May. You're asking it now because we have seen greatness in a glimpse. But you think, is that, you wonder if that's sustainable. I think that's the point of the exercise. Is this a guy that in 43 snaps is going to be able to provide that over the next 5 to 7 to 10 years?
But so, like, to Mully's point, and I'm with Mully on this, from the standpoint of, like, now go show us you can win football games, right? And that means making plays when there are plays to be made in the first three quarters, and then when the game's on the line and the ball's in your hands, you go out and you win football games. We know what the previous quarterback here's track record was in the fourth quarter, what his track record was with the game on the line and the ball in his hands. It was terrible, and it's the reason he's not here anymore. Caleb has to erase that. Look, we don't have long enough today to get into it, but maybe our week zero segment centers around the conversation that we were having 2 years ago about how football teams, quote unquote, learn to win. And I think the three of us were on the same page of, you need to have a quarterback who not only shows the capability of winning football games late, but creates the belief and the momentum that every time you get in one of those situations, you're going to get it done. That's what Patrick Mahomes does. It's why he's got 3 Super Bowl rings and 2 MVP awards. He gets the ball in the fourth quarter, and no matter what's happened for the first 3, the guys get in the huddle and they go, we're winning this football game, you know, and they consistently do it. Caleb has to take that test, and he has to pass that test. And ultimately he's going to have to get an A on that test for Chicago to feel as good about their future as the promise seems to be right now.
Great stuff, Dan. Really fun talking about it. And that's, it's good that we have a subject for week zero.
Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, right. Let's go. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the game tonight and have a good weekend.
All right, buddy. Take care. That's Dan Wiederer and David and Dan do the great podcast. Make sure you tune in. They'll react to everything that's going on.
Yeah, a new episode dropped yesterday. Take the North.
Yeah, great stuff. And well worth learning from. We are we're going to come back and talk about the quarterback stuff a little bit more. I could talk. I mean, I literally love talking NFL quarterback, talking about Caleb Williams. It's just been so much fun.
And top of the hour, Ian O'Connor wrote about another quarterback, Aaron Rodgers.
Yep.
And we'll talk to him.
We'll get to him a little bit later. And wow, it's an interesting book. He goes into Aaron Rodgers' journey with ayahuasca, which I think is well worth the conversation. Have you been to Peru, Mr. David?
No.
Been to the border, but I never had a chance to indulge mercifully. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw.
Good morning, guys. Love your show. Listen to it every morning.
On 670 The Score.
Yeah, I think once he's learned the offense and knows where everybody's supposed to be, then he can really start to dissect of where the breakdown happened or what the case may be. But he's always done a really good job of that. He can see a lot of things and chunk a lot of information on the field for sure. You know, he's always been great at that, understanding space and where people are. And he's been really doing a good job of coaching the other guys and helping those other guys. And they've been helping him. So it's been a process of, you know, two-way communication. So it's been good.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Interesting to hear what Matt Eberflus has to say as he talks about Caleb Williams and his ability to learn from mistakes. And we haven't seen a lot of mistakes from him, frankly. You know, we've heard of a different pick here or there in practice, or him kind of going through periods of unevenness where he's good and then, you know, oh my God, he's flashing greatness, and then he's not as good.
The first 3 series were bad, and you saw him make some errant throws, and that wasn't good, and he rebounded from that pretty professionally.
Why haven't we talked about the fact that they had an issue with communication during that stretch, right? I mean, the Bears apparently, and it's a home game, had difficulty getting information to him on his helmet.
They had to change helmets.
And think about that. Like, this is a rookie quarterback making his debut.
I like that we haven't made much about it because I think it sounds like an excuse.
Okay.
And I don't think we're fully aware of how often that might happen.
Okay.
You know, when you increase how much you use technology, you also increase the chances it's going to go wrong on any given Sunday, so to speak.
Oh, look at you.
And I think when we saw in Hard Knocks, that there was the detail of his helmet was cutting out, and they gave him a new helmet. And then, they presented it in a way that made you believe that the helmet was the problem.
But you know what? I understand it's excuse making, but it's also an explanation.
It is. They didn't, but I applaud them for not using it as an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we understood the depth of the problem until we saw on Hard Knocks, because they didn't offer it postgame as an explanation for why the first three series were as clunky as they were.
Yeah. 3-3 and out's not good.
Not good.
But we don't have to worry about that tonight.
No, right? Because tonight we're going to see, you know, the Bajancy open and the ball move down the field. And the Bears finish the preseason unbeaten.
You feel that coming?
Probably.
Does it matter to you?
No.
Yeah.
It really doesn't.
It's not relevant.
I would like to see Tyson Bajan have a good game.
Yes.
But the outcome really is irrelevant.
I'm very curious to see what some of these, what receivers are available and how they look, if they are. Is Colin Johnson still on this team? I thought he was the star of the Hall of Fame game, and he was going to be in the Hall of Fame.
That was a great story 3 weeks ago.
All right, sorry.
I think injuries got in the way.
Yesterday's news.
Definitely.
Sorry.
I mean, not even yesterday's news. 3 weeks ago, that's an eternity in preseason.
Yeah, it is. But I'm just saying, at that time, there was talk about how good is he, you heard, well, how many receivers are we keeping? Isn't that great?
That was great.
And that was a good moment.
Really cool. Colin Johnson went up and he caught that pass.
So cool. DJ Moore was just like, oh, yeah, that's great. But how many receivers are we keeping? Like, that's the question that still stands.
Feels like it was so long ago.
It was a long time ago. Long, long time ago. I still remember. Okay. We've got a lot to get to. We're going to talk to the author of a new book that is out and is fascinating and is about Aaron Rodgers and about his various journeys through whatever it is Aaron's going through. We're going to talk to Ian O'Connor next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Haw.
Good morning, guys. Love you. Show. Listen to it every morning.
On 670 The Score.
Yeah, I think once he's learned the offense and knows where everybody's supposed to be, then he can really start to dissect of where the breakdown happened or what the case may be. But he's always done a really good job of that. He can see a lot of things and chunk a lot of information on the field for sure. You know, he's always been great at that, understanding space and where people are. And he's been really doing a good job of coaching the other guys and helping those other guys. And they've been helping him. So it's been a process of, you know, two-way communication. So it's been good.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Interesting to hear what Matt Eberflus has to say as he talks about Caleb Williams and his ability to learn from mistakes. And we haven't seen a lot of mistakes from him, frankly. You know, we've heard of a different pick here or there in practice, or him kind of going through periods of unevenness where he's good and then, you know, oh my God, he's flashing greatness, and then he's not as good.
Three series were bad, and you saw him make some errant throws, and that wasn't good, and he rebounded from that pretty professionally.
Why haven't we talked about the fact that they had an issue with communication during that stretch, right? I mean, the Bears apparently, and it's a home game, had difficulty getting information to him on his helmet.
They had to change helmets.
And think about that. Like, this is a rookie quarterback making his debut.
I like that we haven't made much about it because I think sounds like an excuse.
Okay.
And I don't think we're fully aware of how often that might happen.
Okay.
You know, when you increase how much you use technology, you also increase the chances it's going to go wrong on any given Sunday, so to speak.
Oh, look at you.
And I think when we saw on Hard Knocks that there was the detail of his helmet was cutting out and they gave him a new helmet. And then, they presented it in a way that made you believe that the helmet was the problem.
But you know what? I understand it's excuse making, but it's also an explanation.
It is. They didn't, but I applaud them for not using it as an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we understood the depth of the problem until we saw on Hard Knocks, because they didn't offer it postgame as an explanation for why the first three series were as clunky as they were.
Yeah, 3-3 and out's not good.
Not good.
But we don't have to worry about that tonight.
No, right? Because tonight we're going to see, you know, the Bajancy open and the ball move down the field. And the Bears finish the preseason unbeaten.
You feel that coming?
Probably.
Does it matter to you?
No.
Yeah.
It really doesn't.
It's not relevant.
I would like to see Tyson Bajan have a good game.
Yes.
But the outcome really is irrelevant.
I'm very curious to see what some of these, what receivers are available and how they look, if they are. Is Colin Johnson still on this team? I thought he was the star of the Hall of Fame game, and he was going to be in the Hall of Fame.
That was a great story 3 weeks ago.
All right, sorry.
I think injuries got in the way.
Yesterday's news.
Definitely. Sorry. I mean, not even yesterday's news. 3 weeks ago, that's an eternity in preseason.
Yeah, it is. But I'm just saying, at that time, there was talk about how good is he, you heard, well, how many receivers are we keeping? Isn't that great?
That was great.
And that was a good moment.
Really cool. Colin Johnson went up and he caught that pass.
But DJ Moore was just like, oh, yeah, that's great. But how many receivers are we keeping? Like, that's the question that still stands.
Feels like it was so long ago.
It was a long time ago. Long, long time ago. I still remember. Okay. We've got a lot to get to. We're going to talk to the author of a new book that is out and is fascinating and is about Aaron Rodgers and about his various journeys through whatever it is Aaron's going through. We're going to talk to Ian O'Connor next. It's Mully and Haas, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.